This is Gloria Minot Presents.
Glenn Frankel is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who has turned his lens toward Hollywood legends. His last book, The Searchers, earned great praise for his profile of John Ford, John Wayne, and the real-life 19th century kidnapping that inspired the film. Today we're talking about his new book, High Noon, The Hollywood Blacklist, and the making of an American classic. Mr. Frankel, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Well, you chose High Noon. Who was in that again?
Well, the star was the great Gary Cooper at the sort of mid-range, getting toward the end of his career. But this film gave his career another big boost. He was a famous star for more than 30 years in Hollywood and one of the ultimate products of the Hollywood studio system. And no movie he made was better than this one.
You weave together the stories of some of Hollywood's most talented writers and producers, Carl Foreman, Stanley Kramer, Fred Zinnemann, and Cooper himself, as they navigated the era of Hollywood's Red Scare. Talk to us about the McCarthy era and the Red Scare.
Well, this is after World War II. Having won the war, sadly, the United States found itself involved in the Cold War, a 50-year Cold War with the Soviet Union, and each side had nuclear weapons. There was enormous anxiety and fear in the country and disappointment that our victory in World War II had led to this. And there was what I would call a backlash movement politically, people who felt disenfranchised, people who feared that somebody, outsiders, had come and were stealing our country and involving us in this terrible struggle. And so there was a search for enemies. And, of course, congressional committees and the FBI banded together, private groups like the American Legion, hunting for communists, not in the government, in our schools, and, of course, in Hollywood. Hollywood was an irresistible target, if you will, for the House Committee on Un-American Activities. And they came out there looking for so-called communist infiltration and to find people to blame for the problems of the country. I have to say, it has some eerie echoes of our time today in that search for enemies.
Nothing seems to have changed.
Well, yes, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, well, things have changed, but this is a different manifestation. It sort of suggests how fragile our wonderful democracy can become at times when people are fearful.
High Noon became the favorite film of presidents ranging from Dwight D. Eisenhower to Bill Clinton. Tell us why.
Well, I think there's something about the plight of the lawman, the Gary Cooper character. He's facing four killers coming to town to take vengeance on him. And he finds that rather than being able to get support from the solid citizens of the community, from his friends, all the people he's relied on over the years, he's out there on their own, out of cowardice, moral corruption, a lot of things going wrong. He has to face them by themselves. And, you know, the White House can be a very lonely job also. I'm sure presidents often feel that when they face a really difficult crisis, some of their political allies aren't really have their backs, aren't really there behind them. And so for people on both sides of the ideological spectrum, like Eisenhower, a Republican conservative, and Clinton, a liberal Democrat, High Noon appeals to them because they identify with the lawman and his plight.
And as we have mentioned earlier, the Blacklist era was a time of backlash, political vengeance, and vicious rhetoric, similar to our own, with right-wing populists joining forces with traditional conservatives to root out what they see as subversives. Muslims, undocumented immigrants, the LGBT community, yesterday's communists, Jews and liberals accused of stealing our country and its culture from its rightful owners. All that playing out before our very eyes today.
Yes, I think that's true, and I think we all face our own version of High Noon in a sense of, because our democracy is under siege, what do we do? You know, what's the correct response to that? a lot of institutions let us down during the Red Scare. Congress, the courts, the lawyers involved in it, liberals failed in many ways. So many things went wrong. The press, I have to say, did not do a very good job back then. And the question is, how are our institutions going to respond to the current situation? Who's going to stand up for democracy? And, you know, this is a situation where, again, we all have to ask that question. What will we do when we face high noon?
You've used confidential records to weave together the stories that you tell in High Noon. Talk to us about that process.
Well, the House Un-American Activities, the highlight of their time was in 1951 and 52, as I write in the book. 50 years later, the confidential records of their secret hearings, they held public hearings that we all knew about, but they also held a number of confidential secret ones. Those transcripts began to be released, the investigative files of the committee, plus the investigative files of the FBI, which was conducting its own probe, but cooperating, often feeding the committee information. Those things were started to be available, and I was able to go to the National Archives in Washington, D.C., and see a lot of material that people had not looked at when the first Hollywood, great Hollywood blacklist books were written in the 1980s. And that was really interesting. It helped me understand much more the process and who was saying what exactly behind closed doors.
My guest is Glenn Frankel. His latest book is High Noon, The Hollywood Blacklist and the Making of an American Classic. And we're discussing that book now. Would you tell us about the rise of Gary Cooper from young man from Montana to the zenith of Hollywood's, what would I call it now, rising up to the ranks in Hollywood?
Yes, Gary Cooper, as you said, he's a young man from Montana. He comes out to Hollywood after his parents have moved out there for a legal case. He comes for Thanksgiving and he never goes back. He's, you know, needs a job. He's a tall, beautiful young man. And an authentic cowboy, and so he gets work as a stunt writer and an extra in movies, and within a couple of years, even though he has no training, he's a star. By the late 1920s, his name is atop every movie he makes, and it stays that way for 30 years or more. You know, people like John Wayne or Humphrey Bogart worked so hard over so many years to made so many B movies before they achieved stardom. Cooper just walked into it. I call him the natural. And but it's interesting, by the late 1940s and early 50s, the studio system's beginning to unravel a bit, and he's not getting the great parts anymore because Hollywood isn't producing them. And so he finds the High Noon script, and he loves it, and he really wants to do it. He works for less than half his usual salary, and High Noon becomes a sort of personal redemption for him. And I don't know if you've seen it lately, but I think he's fabulous in it. He brings a poignancy and a vulnerability to the marshal that makes him a very interesting, multi-layered character. Without Gary Cooper, I don't think High Noon would be a classic.
What was the role of Hedda Hopper in all this?
Well, Hedda Hopper was the great gossip columnist, one of several, but she really had, you know, millions of readers, and she was very conservative, and she and a number of her friends and partners in Hollywood, people like Walt Disney, people like John Wayne, banded together in the mid-1940s to support the idea of rooting out communists. And they, you know, while they were a minority in Hollywood, it was kind of a reign of terror. And Hedda Hopper was, you know, using her influential column, called out people who she thought were violating American values, whether they were communists or just liberals or whoever. And people feared her because she could cost you your job quite easily. And so Hedda Hopper and other members of the press played their own nefarious role in the Red Scare.
How about the liberal establishment, the press? How did they do in countering all this?
Well, the liberal establishment tried at first. The committee first came out in 1947. That was the time when the Hollywood Ten, when people were called before the committee, refused to cooperate, and eventually went to prison. At first, liberals stood beside them because this was a, you know, a freedom of speech issue. But by the time the committee came back in 1951 for its sequel, I would say. The liberals had disbanded in many ways, were not really offering protection. Several of them, well-meaning people, they felt trapped between the committee on one hand and the few dogmatic communists left in Hollywood on the other. And they ended up aiding and abetting the blacklist in many ways, and so did the press. We were, you know, a journalist, and I was a journalist myself for 30-odd years. We'd go to the hearings, cover the public hearings, and then, of course, report in the newspapers all the people who were named as communists or subversives without ever making an attempt to contact any of those people. Because it was a public hearing, you couldn't get sued for it. You could, as long as you reported what was said in the hearing. But that was only part of what journalism needs to do. Journalism needs to hold powerful people accountable and needs to give people who are accused of things a chance to reply. And that often did not happen in the 1950s.
I know it's unfair to ask you to be brief, but tell us a little about the role of Stanley Kramer and Otto Preminger.
Well, Stanley Kramer was the producer of High Noon. He goes on to make a number of other movies. He and Otto Preminger in the late 1950s helped break the blacklist finally by hiring blacklisted screenwriters and by giving them screen credit for their work. And that was a crucial moment. Both them and Kirk Douglas, the maker of Spartacus, as I say, really did a lot to break the blacklist. It was a very courageous thing to do.
Glenn Frankel, his latest book is High Noon, The Hollywood Blacklist and the Making of an American Classic. Thank you so much.
Thanks for talking to me.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.